Randall, I am back with another question that I did not prepare you for as we get into episode two of Sports Out of Time. Randall, a very special episode as we talk about professional wrestling legend Tim Woods. Do me a favor, name five professional wrestlers. Go.
Oh, Randy Macho Man Savage, Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, Steve Austin, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and
Okay.
The Rock.
That was actually pretty good. You did a nice job there.
Yeah.
That was impressive.
Thank you.
You picked some of the most mainstream of all time, but I appreciate that.
Well, you
And
know.
we'll get into that in just a minute, but why don't we do our drop? It's episode two, season one, Sports Out of Time, The Man Who Saved Wrestling. I was just talking to a friend of mine who used to listen to the Unicast show all the time, and they were asking me what we were doing this week, and I said we're doing Mr. Wrestling Tim Woods, and the reasoning is I want to get all the Utica stuff and all the wrestling stuff out of the way as soon as possible.
Wait a minute. You
Look,
can't get all the wrestling stuff out of the way.
well, we got to see how much people like the wrestling stuff. And again,
True.
we'll talk about it as we get into the episode, because we do discuss whether or not wrestling counts as
Yeah.
sports. I don't know necessarily that it does.
Sports.
Yeah, sports with a quotation marks around it.
Exactly. You know, I do think though that this is a good time to launch it because we just saw this week with the Warriors and the Kings, you know, the NBA's all-star wrestler,
Draymond Green, what an
Draymond
animal.
Green doing a stomp, right? He was,
There's
and then he was calling out to the audience like he's the
you
Hulkster.
know, not for nothing. We didn't even really mention it during this episode, but just as you say it now, I was thinking about it. There actually is a pretty robust history of professional athletes crossing over into
Yeah,
professional wrestling. Muhammad
absolutely.
Ali, famously. Lawrence Taylor fought Bam Bam Bigelow at the main
Okay.
event of WrestleMania 11 and won somehow. He was victorious. Famously, Floyd Money Mayweather fought the Big Show at WrestleMania. So it is somewhat
Yeah.
common to see these sort of crossovers. And I also think it's interesting too that in between the time we recorded the bulk of this episode and our introduction, the WWE was purchased by the UFC. So this quote unquote fake sport was purchased by the
Right.
group that owns one of the largest real fight sports in the world. And I'm still very curious to see what that means going
Exactly.
forward in the
Yeah, it'll
future.
be interesting.
So before we get into anything today, I just want to do a very, very light amount of housekeeping and some updates from last week. So for folks who had remained on the Uticast stream on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, you might have noticed that the episode popped right up. So we are currently on Spotify, Apple, and SoundCloud. You can go to any of those streams and listen to us and all of our upcoming episodes for season one and beyond. I will say the Spotify one works just great. SoundCloud works just great. I am aware on the Apple Podcast version that the picture did not come through and it still says the Uticast. I'm
Yeah.
working on it. I just know I'm working on it. I'm sorry. It's a real pain for some reason on Apple, but that is still the landing place for all the upcoming episodes, and I'll be working on that over the rest of the week. This episode is going to feature some audio content, unlike the last week's episode where we had to find a lot of I used a lot of the same audio content from the same highlights because it told the whole
Yeah.
story.
Right.
I do this is a little different because this is the 1970s, and I do have to sort of bounce around all over the place. So I
Okay.
just want to mention a couple people here real quick. Shout out to the YouTube link 106 North Albany, where I found tons of wonderful 1970s wrestling highlights for Tim Woods.
Very cool.
There are two specific voices you will hear that I was not able to discuss during the episode. The first is famous wrestling announcer Gordon Solie, who was a wrestler from the time that all the announcers kind of talked like this, no matter what was happening in the ring. Oh, a chair to the head, and he looks to be down. So you'll hear that voice. And then the other voice you will hear at one point in time is the son of one of the men involved in the plane crash in this week's episode, Greg the Hammer Valentine, who is discussing his father's plane crash. So that's the other voice you will hear later on. I just want to say one last thing before we get started here. Randall, you were a great sport having to go through this episode, because this episode started as one thing and sort of became something else. By the end, it was almost us discussing a lot of the art of professional wrestling. Were you at least interested when I brought this up to you?
Yeah, no, this is you live in this arena, right?
Yes, I do.
You have for a long time, and I don't, you know, I've watched wrestling, as we talked about, just, you know, a little bit here and there. Yeah. So, but this is one of those where I learned a ton during our conversation, which is great. That's what, you know, I loved it. So it was a lot of fun for me. So I'm glad that you did it. I really am.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because you were my test subject. If it was interesting for you, I hope it's also interesting for our listeners to learn a little bit about what professional wrestling really is and why I say it's still the greatest American art form since jazz. It's the last great American art form that we've come up with. I just want to say one last thing before we get in this week's episode. Tim Woods, Mr. Wrestling, me and this story, this has been one of my personal missions going back for years. During the pandemic, when we couldn't get people to come on the Utahcast because of everything going on, and we had to come up with creative ideas and doing tournaments and countdowns and things like that, I really desperately at that time wanted to do a whole podcast, 2-3 podcasts about this story, about Tim Woods, this forgotten Utica legend.
Sure.
And it never really came to fruition. So being able to do it here was sort of the way that I was able to get it out. And I just want to say, I did reach out to a local common council person on Instagram to let them know that I'd really like to see them name a street after Tim Woods here in Utica. He's a forgotten here, maybe Woods Ave or Mr. Wrestling Boulevard, something there here in the city.
Mr. Wrestling Boulevard. That'd be amazing.
Driving down Genesee and Mr. Wrestling Boulevard would be great.
Yeah.
So with that being said, we don't need to delay much longer unless you have anything else you want to discuss before we jump in.
I want to get to it.
All right. Beautiful. All right. Let's get to it, folks. Episode 2, season 1, as we look at Tim Woods, the man saved wrestling. Randall, I can't think of a better place to start and a better question to ask to get this going off, and to ask you this question. This is a sports podcast, of course, Randall. Is professional wrestling a sport?
Oh, wow. That's an excellent question. Well, there's no doubt there's athleticism involved in it.
Yes.
But just because something is an athletic event doesn't make it a sport. And I would say that a sport is, I would typically say a sport is something that doesn't have a predetermined outcome.
That is correct. That is correct. Yeah. That's the right answer. I tend to think of wrestling sort of like the Muppet Show. It's a show about people putting on a wrestling show, right? It's not really a show about wrestling, right? It's the story about all the people who work at a wrestling show and the television show that they have to produce every week.
Okay. It's an interesting way of looking at it.
Well, my second question for you is this. Is professional wrestling fake?
Oh, well, I think the outcomes are fake. So in that sense, yes.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's almost like it's like they're just doing stunts, right?
So
I mean, I don't know.
When people say this to me, this is a question that's brought up all the time whenever somebody who doesn't like professional wrestling says, oh, you mean like Hulk Hogan and stuff, right? I'm like, yeah. And they go, like that fake stuff. And I go, well, is Game of Thrones fake? Do you know what I mean? Like, is it that's sort of the question I ask. Like, it's a television show. It's not fake is the wrong word. I like scripted as a better adjective.
Sure.
It's a scripted television show.
Yeah. That makes more sense.
And I think when people think of professional wrestling as a television show, they tend to think of modern professional wrestling, what I call the Vince McMahon era of professional wrestling. But our story today actually goes before that, into what I call the territorial era of wrestling. So before I dig into all of that, Randall, I want to get your baseline. As I'm going to treat you as
John Q. Public, who has a general feeling about professional. What do you know when I say professional wrestling to you? What do you think of? What comes to your mind?
Well, I'm probably like most of those people who think like Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan, I'm sure there's going to be a thorough investigation by the World Wrestling Federation into what happened here tonight, and I know you could not be any more disappointed.
How much money did they spend on the plastic surgery, man? I had all bases covered.
Andre the Giant. I mean, yep. That's the era in which I kind of grew up, and it was on, right? With that. But I did watch professional wrestling early on in, like, I guess the late 70s, early 80s, where it was just, you know, some big dudes in a ring grappling, right?
Yeah, I did some research about, you were born in Chicago, you're born in Joliet?
Yeah, right. Yes.
So you were born in Joliet during the territorial wrestling era, which I guess is any part of wrestling up until the early 1990s when Vince McMahon bought up all the territories and turned it into one big conglomerate,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What you had was dozens of different small wrestling territories across the country, right? So you had the Worldwide Wrestling Federation in New York. You had Jim Crockett Promotions, which would have been Virginia and South Carolina and North Carolina. You had Championship Florida from Wrestling, Championship Florida from Georgia, Championship Wrestling from Georgia. And for you growing up, there would have been two different wrestling companies. Would have been one company out of Indianapolis called the World Wrestling Association.
Okay.
And then there would have been a much larger company operating out of Minneapolis, which is one of the big major territory companies called the AWA, the American Wrestling Association, featuring such stars as Nick Bockwinkel, Vern Gagne, Greg Gagne, Hulk Hogan early on in his career.
That's your job out here. Bobby, people like to know a little bit about me.
Yes.
You're the kind of a guy that just keeps talking, don't let anybody else get a word in. Now interview me while I can get my interview done here.
I like it.
And don't waste any time talking about other little things that are trivial. Talk to me right now. Go ahead, come on.
Bobby.
You know, I got a lot to say. I'm not the kind of a guy that stands around.
That would have been around your era of area of Illinois and Chicago growing up.
Sure. Yeah, that sounds about right.
And I think the other thing to keep in mind, and I guess what's important here, is that wrestling in this era, you know, the way it worked is wrestlers would sort of travel around from area to area, right? You do your whole little bit in one area, and then once it got stale, you'd bounce around to a different area. And that was sort of the story. That's how Andre the Giant, who you mentioned, became this big attraction. He would just come into a territory. No one ever seen anything like him. He was a myth. He was a legend, right? And especially in this era, and we'll talk at the very end about the end of this era, wrestling was real, right? The myth of wrestling was the reality. Like I guess this is the part where we need to turn into a special category that I created just for today, okay?
Okay.
And this category is called phrases. The certain words that I'm going to have to share to the non-wrestling public that I'm going to use sort of casually because I have to. And I'll try my best to explain them here. The first one is the first one is gimmick, okay? In professional wrestling, a gimmick is your character, right? The Undertaker's gimmick is that he's an undead Western mortician zombie, right? Hulk Hogan's gimmick is that he's a big pro-American steroid tan weirdo, you know, like whatever your character is your gimmick. And in this era, you would live your gimmick as though it was your real life because you were keeping up this impression that wrestling is real, right?
So if
you are, and I'll give you a good example, one of my favorite characters from all of wrestling, this guy by the name of Nikita Koloff, the Russian Nightmare.
As well as the World Tag Team Champions, Ivan Koloff, Nikita Koloff, and Crusher Khrushchev to open up today's program.
Ain't nothing can stop us. You see, this here, I put it in proper grammar so all the ignorant Americans could understand it. Yes.
Nikita Koloff was a dude essentially from Florida or Alabama, I want to say. His real name is like Nelson Simpson, right? He's from Minnesota, right? So, but he became this character known as the Russian Nightmare, Nikita Koloff, the nephew of the former Russian wrestler Ivan Koloff, right? And for the rest of Nikita Koloff's life, he had to keep up what was called kayfabe. Kayfabe is the term that is, this is real, right? So in kayfabe, this man's name is Nikita Koloff. He's a Russian. He's a Russian immigrant. He doesn't speak any English. He's only here to fight and kill and tear and beat up all the Americans because he hates America.
Okay.
In kayfabe. In reality, this man's name is Nelson Simpson, right? But in wrestling in this era, you did everything you could to protect your gimmick and to protect kayfabe, this idea that wrestling is real, that everything you see in front of you is real. You know, this guy legally right. changed his name to Nikita Koloff. He learned Russian, right? When he would go out in public, he had to have somebody there to speak for him because he had to keep up the gimmick that he never spoke English in public. Right. He only spoke English in the car, right? When he would get Yeah, that's the kind of, it's like being a magician, right? That was part of the gimmick. So, and the only reason I say that is to sort of present this in a way, because this applies to our subject today, Tim Woods.
Okay.
And the only two other terms that are easy ones, these ones have sort of crossed into the mainstream, are heel and face. Heel is the term for a bad guy wrestler, right? A bad guy is a heel. Right. You're mad at him, right?
Got it.
And a face is a shortening of the term baby face. He's the good guy wrestler. So your faces are your good guy wrestlers and your heels are your bad guy wrestlers. So there's your wrestling terminology. Gimmick is your character. Kayfabe is we're making sure it's real. It's real, guys. Heel is bad. Face is good. Sorry for all the wrestling fans who are like, wait, no, I know all of this.
You know all of them personally.
All of these ready. So today's subject is a guy who I've been excited to talk about for many years. And the original reason that I have to say get out of the way early on, because it does no relation to the story otherwise, is that this man, George Burrell Wooden, a.k.a. Tim Woods, was born on July 28th, 1934 in Utica, New York. So the reason which is where I'm from, of course. Yes. So that was... I'm surprised. I'm still actually campaigning to get a Tim Woods statue built in the city. They have not yet responded to any of my claims.
They haven't responded at all.
They keep laughing at me. So Tim Woods was born in Utica, New York. There's a much longer story, and I will shout out here ProWrestlingStories.com and Pro Wrestling Machine on YouTube, who I looked up for a lot of research, who had some really nice, like way deeper background into what we're going to do today.
Okay.
But yeah, Tim Woods. Tim Woods was born in Utica, New York, and he began wrestling sort of late at the age of 28 years old. Tim Woods was a real wrestler. He was a real collegiate wrestler. He went to Cornell, got an agricultural engineering degree, and then wrestled collegiately at Michigan State University, winning two Big Ten titles from 1958 and 1959.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's legit, right?
Yeah.
And it was in the era at the time where you were one of two types of people who became a wrestler. You were either a big, giant, strong guy, big, giant monster. They could dress up as a heel. Or you were a legitimate, tough guy. And Tim Woods fell in that second category. Sort of legitimate, tough guy wrestler. Could do all the actual collegiate wrestling moves, but was small. Didn't really have the size, right? So he was what you would refer to as a jobber to the stars, right? He went to start wrestling and he would lose to all the best wrestlers, but he would make them look great.
Woods is outside the ring at the count of 20. Johnny Valentine inside the ring is then legally declared the winner of the match. So Johnny Valentine retains the Southern Heavyweight Championship, but Tim Woods, completely infuriated, moving in against Johnny Valentine. Woods,
he was given the gimmick of Mr. Wrestling by a promoter named Joe Dusak. The Mr. Wrestling gimmick, he had this white mask and these white tights, and he looked very elegant. A luchador style mask, which I'm holding up one right here to give an example, right? One of these style luchador masks. Now, the Mr. Wrestling gimmick has been used many times. It's been used four times in the old era and four times in the modern era. It's a gimmick that's transitioned on from person to person, but Tim Woods was the original Mr. Wrestling.
Really?
Yeah. This happens a lot in wrestling. In Japan, there's a character called Tiger Mask, who, again, it's a gimmick that just gets passed down. The mask and the outfit goes to like the next young upstart.
The next Tiger Mask.
The next Tiger Mask, right? Same thing here at Mr. Wrestling, right? So Mr. Wrestling made the territories, including the WWWF, and he would sort of alternate between Tim Woods and Mr. Wrestling. So, all right, so he could do both. He could be both characters. He would go to a territory and then lose the mask in like a mask versus title match or something. And then he'd wrestle as himself or something like that. So, so that was sort of the gimmick, right? There's really two things famously that Tim Woods is known for. The first is a wild story. While Tim Woods was mostly a jobber or a lower tier wrestler fighting his way up, By the mid to late 1960s, early 1970s, he had established himself in Mr. Wrestling as a pretty popular, I'd call him a mid-card wrestler. Not a top-tier star, but moving his way up. Tag team champion type guy, right?
Right.
But in 1968, this is how wrestling used to work. You could still do a bit in wrestling in 1968 where you could challenge a real person from the audience to come in and fight one of the wrestlers. Right? So in 1968... Tim Woods faced a street fighter named Arnold Sperlin, who was a former Gold Gloves champion in a shoot fight. This was in Columbus, Georgia. Tim Woods is sort of knocking him around using non-wrestling moves, punching him, slapping him around.
Yeah.
So in the course of this match, Arnold Sperlin bites off a portion of Tim Woods' finger.
What?
He just bites off a part of his finger, plah, spits it on the mat, right? A bunch of other wrestlers come in, start beating up Sperlin. There's a whole big riot. Wrestling was very dangerous back then, right? The finger, they get the finger, they take it to the hospital. They try and reattach it. He has a couple different surgeries. He never really regains full use of this finger. Like, it never really heals totally, but loses his finger. Later on, he would challenge for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, which was the big title at the time. And the match was stopped because his finger wouldn't stop bleeding. Although I think that was probably part of the gimmick, right? I think that was part of the story.
Probably.
But this just sort of shows you what kind of guy he was, right? Willing to get into a real shoot fight with a person in the audience, not being aware that he could be stabbed or have his finger bitten off in Columbus, Georgia in 1968 on a Tuesday night for like $50.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So that's the sort of guy he is. And I guess this is a good spot to jump into a couple other wrestling names who are going to be involved in the major part of our story.
Okay.
And I'll give you one. What do you know about Ric Flair? Does that name ring a bell for you?
Oh, yeah. No, that's a name that I remember.
But I got news for you. See, I'm still wearing cashmere.
Yeah.
I'm still walking around in alligators. Woo! I'm still looking at the diamonds on this big old Rolex. I'm still riding around that limousine. And I am still driving the women in this world.
That's a name that I know. And I think he's made kind of a resurgence in the last few years, right?
Yeah. There's a Peacock documentary. There's an HBO documentary. Ric Flair is probably one of the most famous wrestlers of all time, I would argue, if you're thinking about the names that when you ask a regular person, name a professional wrestler, I would say Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, maybe like... I don't know, Brock Lesnar. People say Brock Lesnar these days, if you ask him, you know, like John Cena is a very popular answer for this question. But yeah, Ric Flair, I think from a certain era, probably one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
Yeah.
In 1973, 74, 75, before this event, he's not really that famous. He's a big, giant, strong guy wrestler, still sort of working his way up the card. Not quite the wrestler that he will be. Again, one of the most famous wrestlers of all time. Charisma machine, you know, the nature boy having all the quotes, wheeling, dealing, jet flying, kiss stealing, son of a gun, my watch costs more than your house, stuff like that. Good stuff. Yeah. The other couple names here are just a couple other wrestlers who sort of showed up during this, who are involved in this event. One is a guy named Johnny Valentine. Another is a guy named Joe Farkas, who is also a pilot. That's important. And then there's another guy named David Crockett, who is a commentator. He's a wrestling announcer. So, again, I was sad stories.
Yeah.
On October 4th, 1975, for the second time in 1975, and it also happened in February 10th, there is a plane crash that involves a variety of popular wrestlers transporting back and forth between the territories. In this case, the plane crash takes place with a two-engine Cessna 310. So you're talking a small aircraft, small airplane, right?
With the pilot said he could smell gas. There was still gas in the plane, but he couldn't get the engines restarted. And it landed short of the runway. But the bad part about it is it ran into a railroad embankment crosswise, and it just come to a screeching halt. All the chairs in the Cessna, all the seats and everything came loose.
Side note, No, thank you. I don't ever want to go on like a small, tiny airplane.
Probably not, right?
I don't like even going on the airplanes where they have just like two seats on one side and one on the other. Have you ever been on one of those? Yeah, no, thanks. Yeah. Yeah. I hate it. I hate it. I just don't. I'm sorry. I don't like it. I won't get into every single detail. I will go into the real basics. It's a North Carolina to Wilmington, Virginia. So a short flight. The plane would run out of gas. Joe Farkas, who's the pilot, didn't distribute the weight correctly on the plane. And these are big, giant professional wrestlers. Yeah. You know,
right?
You have six guys in this plane. You have Ric Flair and Johnny Valentine and Joe Farkas and David Crockett and Bob Burgers, and then also Tim Woods. So the plane crashes. Tim Woods quotes saying, "We dropped like a rock." The reserve tank of gas had also been jettisoned because the plane was too heavy because of all the wrestlers. I won't get into every single detail. Unfortunately, Bob Burgers would never wrestle again. Johnny Valentine broke his back, ended his career. Ric Flair broke his back in three places, but told he would never wrestle again. He would return to wrestling within, I want to say, 6 weeks, 6 months, some very short amount of time. Yeah. Way, way too short, right?
Okay.
And then Tim Woods. Tim Woods, boy, tough for Tim Woods. He suffered broken ribs. He ripped his mouth open. He had a dislocated shoulder. He could barely walk. He had a compression fraction in his back. But the other thing about this story that's important is that wrestling is still real in 1975. The myth of wrestling, the story of wrestling.
Yeah.
And what you have here is an airplane full of five heel wrestlers and one babyface wrestler, Tim Woods, right? So when Tim Woods goes to the hospital, he has to give his real name. George Burrell Wooden, say he's a promoter, because he knows that if he doesn't say that, people are going to figure it out. But this is the era of pre-internet. This is like local wrestling reporting. Like the Charlotte Observer is out there reporting on this, right? And so the story starts to come out that, you know, George Burrell Wooden is actually Tim Woods, a.k.a. Mr. Wrestling. What's going on? Why is Tim Woods also on this airplane with these guys he's supposedly feuding with, in particular Johnny Valentine, his hated heel rival, right?
They made a point because he was supposed to wrestle Valentine that night. And if it came out that the two of them were on the same plane, and it almost killed you because if Wahoo was on that plane,
yeah,
it would have done the same thing, and you wouldn't have been able to get away with it.
No. No one knew who George Wooden was. How we pulled it off. They never found out it was Tim Woods.
And this is sort of in the, you know, not for nothing, this is sort of in the era when people were starting to ask the question, right? This is when John Stossel got beat up on television for asking a wrestler if wrestling was fake. It was like a deadline, ABC.
Yeah.
So, like, it's already sort of a well-known sort of out there secret that wrestling isn't real, right? But we're still protecting it in 1975, and a lot of these wrestlers are under the guidelines that if someone comes up to you and says, "Hey, I think wrestling's fake," you're supposed to kick their ass. And if you don't kick their ass, you're going to get fired because you have to protect the business, right?
Wow.
That's how important it was. Because, again, it's still real in 1975.
Yeah. Okay.
It's also known that, like, Wahoo McDaniel, who was also a wrestler, went to the hospital to check on his friend, Ric Flair, who he was also feuding with, and police stopped him at the door. Like, "No, I'm sorry, you can't go in there. We can't have you fighting with Ric Flair in the hospital."
Back then, they thought Wahoo came in the hospital to kick my ass. They did. They were like, they called the cops to get Wahoo out of the emergency room. He just broke all lines of kayfabe. I mean, he walked in the door and see if we were okay. He didn't give a shit. That's what kind of man he was. But they called the police because they thought Wahoo was coming in to kick everybody's ass while we were down. So
what happens, right? These stories keep coming around. The news reports are happening. People are growing more and more suspicious. It's coming out that these wrestlers are getting real concerned about it. So on October 18th, 1975, only 2 weeks after the plane crash, Tim Woods enters the ring in an effort to preserve kayfabe and prove that he wasn't on the plane. It was not a very long match. It was very short, and he was very limited in the amount of wrestling that he did, right? He just sort of took some basic bumps and stayed out. And it seems weird at the time. But a lot of wrestlers from this era credit him as the man who saved wrestling, right? Made it possible for pro wrestling to continue in its current form, was the quote from the article I read about this from UpRocks. Saved the livelihood of every other wrestler in the world at the time. Even in his book, To Be the Man.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Ric Flair quotes him. More than just Mr. Wrestling, he was the man who saved wrestling on that day. So even like the guys in wrestling look at this man as, you know, for a time as the man who really saved their profession, right? You know, this could have theoretically exposed everything to the world. Now, the sad part about this, of course, is this would only really be relevant for about another 23 years. So I'll get into that in just a second. But Randall, what do you think? What are your thoughts here? I'm trying to think. We talked a little bit about Carnival Barkers. We talked about Eddie Griddle and Eddie Griddle in that last episode. This sort of falls in that same sort of territory of like, is this even, this is just spectacle. It's not even really sport, but this almost feels closer to sport than what I see when I watch wrestling today because of how closely they hold it. Like they're treating it like it's a real sport in a way that today it is really sort of meta and they just sort of blow past it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's it's so interesting that they had to protect it so ferociously. I mean, really
were a kid, did you know it was fake when you watched wrestling as a kid? Did you not fake? I hate using that word. Did you know as a kid that it wasn't real?
I don't know if I knew that as a kid. You're just watching it and I probably didn't think, oh, this is fake. I don't think it was until I got older and, you know, you're just, then it becomes so much, you see the spectacle more, right? The older you get, you're like, oh, wait, this is a show. Like you're saying.
It's one of those things where once you start asking questions and pulling at the threads a little bit, it stops making sense, right? It's like, well, wait a second. Why would you just stand there? You know what I mean? Like, I think that's a big part. I've seen what real fights look like between people, right? I've seen it's never pretty or choreographed, right?
No.
For me, I remember, I want to say it was the 1991 Survivor Series, and my old man had gotten the cable black box from Heron Cable, and he had put it up on the TV so we could watch the pay-per-view. And Hulk Hogan lost to The Undertaker. He lost his world title, and I cried as a little kid, right? So I would have been like 7. And I think that was the moment where he was like, hey, listen, let me talk to you a little bit about what this really is. Right? Like he had to pull me to the side and be like, this is not, this is all a story. You don't have to worry. He's fine. Like Hulk Hogan's fine. He's not dead. The Undertaker, just because The Undertaker put him in a body bag doesn't mean that he's actually dead. Right. He's fine.
Right.
Well,
I think that back in the early days, and I'm sure there's some of that today, even probably maybe even more so because what they have to do to be, to their bodies to get in shape and everything. Yeah. But they, I mean, I've seen the movie The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know how accurate a portrayal that is, but it, you know, in that era, it was a rough way to make a living.
I mean, there's a whole television series on Vice called Dark Side of the Ring, which goes into stories like this that exist. There's a million wrestlers. I could do a whole podcast called Wrestling Out of Time, just about all the wild stories, the murder of Bruiser Brody. Like there's all these crazy stories that happen across, especially in this era of wrestling, when it was this territorial, everyone's sort of doing their own thing. It's the Wild West. They're all competing against each other. And that actually sort of leads into the aftermath of this, because again, kayfabe, the idea of preserving the idea that wrestling is real kind of went by the wayside, but there is no established date. There's a few moments in time that sort of really opened up the idea that wrestling wasn't real. Before we get to that, I just want to follow up. So after this plane crash where Ric Flair got back into the ring wildly quickly, the major thing was that his body had changed. In 1973, he was a big, giant, burly galoot of a man, but he lost a lot of weight with the plane crash and his broken back. So he came back as a much slimmer, trimmer man. So he had to sort of change his look and gimmick, going from this big rough and tumble wrestler to the Nature Boy with his bleached blonde hair and his robes with the big billowing flowers. And that became the character, of course, that Ric Flair that we know today. He had to change his whole style of wrestling and the way he wrestled because of what happened to him here. Tim Woods would retire in 1983, sort of like low-key hanging around in the wrestling world, the way that a lot of older wrestlers tend to, just sort of lurking on the periphery. Right. He did open a heating and air conditioning business, though, later on. Oh, so good for him.
There you go.
To welcome you into the Legends Society.
I'll make it very short, but I want to thank everybody, all the fans that have helped make this such a great sport and such a great town. Thank you for inviting me, everybody. This is a great honor.
But I'll give you the kayfabe breaking moments, the things that sort of showed the world that wrestling was no longer real. 1987, Hacksaw Jim Duggan and the Iron Sheik are pulled over while driving together on the road. To this day, Hacksaw Jim Duggan claims that he did not know that the Iron Sheik had cocaine on him when they were pulled over, but it just so turns out that he did. The bigger deal, of course, was that the Iron Sheik was famously a heel and Hacksaw Jim Duggan was a babyface. He was sort of de-pushed. He was never quite as popular or pushed up the card in wrestling again for this, although this story did sort of just fade off into the distance.
Right.
The earliest date you could really go is February 10th, 1989, when in front of the New Jersey state legislation, Vince McMahon, the owner of World Wrestling Federation and essentially the godfather of modern professional wrestling, testifies that pro wrestling is officially entertainment to the New Jersey state legislation, primarily to get out of a lot of the legal restrictions of having to get like sporting licenses for venues when you didn't have to. Right. He's like, listen, like, guys, let's be honest here.
What's let's come on here.
In wrestling terms, on November 4th, 1997, the Montreal screw job happens, which is when professional wrestler Bret Hart signed a contract to go wrestle for the rival WCW. So afraid that he would take the belt to the other promotion, the belt was stolen from Bret Hart. And there's a million stories about the Montreal screw job. Wrestling fans are screaming at me. They're like, just there's a million ones. The first on-air moment where wrestling felt like it was lying to you. It's like, wait a second, what just happened? Did they just call a three count and roll the bell up? And what's going on? And then on December 15th, 1997, Vince McMahon actually goes on television and gives a short speech that I'll play in just a second, where he says they're going to stop insulting the intelligence of the WWE viewer about what they're viewing and discussing the new world of professional wrestling.
This is a conscious effort on our part to open the creative envelope, so to speak, in order to entertain you in a more contemporary manner. Even though we call ourselves sports entertainment because of the athleticism involved, the key word in that phrase is entertainment. The WWF extends far beyond the strict confines of sports presentation into the wide open environment of broad-based entertainment. We borrow from such...
Which is sort of where we are today, right? Wrestling today, you know, most wrestlers, you may play a character on television, but then you go on an interview and you're just the guy talking about, oh, it's fun doing this character. This would have made a guy like Tim Woods roll over in his grave. This is a man who fought a match, you know, with 2 weeks away from having his back broken or compression fracture to preserve this. And nowadays people just have podcasts and stories, and it only happened in about 20 years, the quick change. So while Tim Woods is the man who saved wrestling, he really only saved it for about 24 years.
Well, yeah. You know, it's interesting because you wonder if did he saved it in that form, but could this have been the moment where KFAB went out the window and left? Could they have accelerated that change? You know what I mean? If you think about it, I don't know. I'm just speculating, right?
No, it's a good question. I think Vince McMahon's the Vince McMahon we think of today, Vince McMahon Jr., the guy who just retired and then came back, the controversial figure.
Yep.
He's really the guy when you think about most of the modern innovations of professional wrestling in terms of television and what we think of it today. I don't know that people were willing to lean into the idea of wrestling being this meta commentary where these are actors playing characters, right? One of the things I always loved about wrestling, and I think is fascinating, and I'm actually glad you brought this up. So think about Hulk Hogan. You know, he's a terrible person, but let's think about him anyway for just a second, right? Hulk Hogan became the character Hulk Hogan in 1979, okay? Before that, he had been wrestling as Terry the Boulder Bollea or, you know, a variety of other characters over time. But in 1979, he becomes Hulk Hogan. And from 1979 till today, he is still Hulk Hogan. When Hulk Hogan walks out in the street, people don't say to him, "Hey, Terry, great job playing Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 3. They say, "Hey, Hulkster, give me a picture. What you going to do, brother?" Right? Like, and from, so it's a strange acting gig, right? It's not like Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks goes, he plays a character. He's Castaway. He's in Castaway. People don't walk and be like, "Ah, Castaway," right? They go, "Hey, Tom Hanks, right? But when you play a wrestler, you essentially become this character still, right? It's not real, but you are Hulk Hogan for the rest of your life. You were a good guy you were a bad guy in the AWA, then you were a good guy in the WWF, and then you were a bad guy in WCW, and then you came back to WWF and you were a good guy. And the less I say about his TNA run, the better. But you have this 25-year career where you are this character with peaks and valleys. Yeah. You're always this character. And I can't think of another acting gig. I guess maybe like a long-term television show is the only thing I can think of where you embody this character or this archetype so fluently.
Sure. Well, do you think that I think because of very specific era, because you look at like Dwayne, the Rock Johnson, right?
Exactly. Yep.
I mean, some people call him the Rock still, but he's not the wrestling character. I don't know if he ever really was a wrestling character. I know he wrestled, but you know, I didn't know his wrestling career.
No, right? He's a very different wrestling. I find it hilarious that he is such a major star today because the wrestling character that he was so like vulgar and obscene and kind of wild and not like, it's just very strange. Like if you watch the Young Rock television show and then go watch any episode of Monday Night Raw from 1998, you'd be stunned. You're like, "Oh my God, this guy, this is the guy." Now I want to make a point too, before I forget. It's not that wrestling kayfabe is gone, right? The idea of people who are only doing things in character. It's just way less relevant. Like people, you don't see it as often now. There's one guy that I do want to shout out here. He's one of the most interesting wrestlers working in the business today. He is the champion of a wrestling company called the All Elite Wrestling, or AEW Wrestling. His name is Maxwell Jacob Friedman, or MJF. And what I like about this guy is that he's one of the few wrestlers in the world today who essentially keeps kayfabe all the time.
I have an issue with professional wrestling fans. I'm going to tell you why. For some reason, they think they're supposed to have access to me. Like I'm your best bud, like I've known you, you know, since pre-K. When that's not the case. You know, most of these people are white trash, you know, hicks from the sticks that don't know their left from their right, don't know how to count all the way up to 10. And it's sad, but it's not my problem. So if I'm not making eye contact with
you, goes to do an interview, he's an asshole. When he's on Twitter, he's an asshole. Like he's a piece of shit to every person all the time, right? He flips off little kids. He'll like call you a piece of garbage. Like if you're a parent who's like, "I can't believe you did this to my kid," he'll flip you off. Like that's like he lives the whole gimmick. Like I don't know. And that's sort of where I think about it today. I'm like, that's how you could still do it, right? You'd have to be willing to take it. You'd have to be willing to take the real life, like trauma of people being on you all the time because of social media, right? Like, that's the big difference, right? Like, so think about Tim Woods, Ric Flair, like these guys have to keep up the character all the time, but there's no, once you leave the arena and you're in the car and you're in the hotel, no one's tweeting at you. No one's taking pictures on their cell phones, right? Like now I think you've also gotten to a place where it's almost impossible. It would have been impossible at a certain point to keep this idea up that this is all on the up and up, right? Like at some point in time, there's too many people watching, too much text messaging, too many cameras, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So maybe this was all going to go away anyway. And what Tim Woods really did was just keep this style of professional wrestling alive for a little bit longer.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Look up an MJF promo after you're done. You'll get a good laugh out of it. He's a terrible human being, but a phenomenal professional wrestler. And that's really all I have about Tim Woods. I'm actually really happy. I've been trying to talk about Tim Woods for many years. It's just one of those weird things. Like I always hoped there would be a Utica wrestler, like some wrestler from Utica. I was glad that there was this guy. But I also thought to myself, because when I was a kid, I did earnestly want to be a professional wrestler. I don't think they would have let me say that I was from Utica. They would have made me change it, right? They would be like, "You can't say you're from Utica. No one knows where that is. You have to say you're from like parts unknown. Yeah, right. Like from your seasonal residence in Miami Beach or something along those lines, right?
Yeah. From parts unknown.
Parts unknown. Yeah, that's my favorite one of all time. I always like, you know, it was funny too. I was thinking about this, like, I love when that's the kayfabe. Like, that's another good example is The Undertaker. I'm sure you know The Undertaker, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, for a long time, they would always sort of say, you know, he was from, like, Death Valley, like some vague place, right?
Sure.
But I also remember as a kid, The Ultimate Warrior, you know, he was this crazy maniac. Yeah. He looked like he was in a hair metal band, just steroided up. And I always thought it was funny that, like, in his biography, he was listed as from Queens, New York. It just didn't seem like a play. I was like, really? Queens? I would think The Ultimate Warrior would be from someplace like outer space or from a nebula far, far away. Nope. Just Queens.
Just Queens.
Just Queens, hanging out in Queens. Yeah. Really high taxes out here in Queens. And that's really it. I mean, by the time this episode comes out, I think WrestleMania will just be right around happening. Has this intrigued you any more about professional wrestling as a whole?
Well, I think because I know I've seen that Ric Flair documentary thing on HBO, and I remember seeing about how the regional wrestling leagues and how it kind of all came together, which was pretty interesting. And I do think, you know, I this is a sports history show, so obviously the history of these things is always interesting to me.
Yeah,
and how it came to be what it is today. But yeah, I don't know that I'm going to go watch anything, you know, recent or current.
It's funny. It's funny too, because by the time this comes out, I don't know if this story will be over with. There is like a story going on in professional wrestling right now that is like the hottest story in all professional wrestling. It's like the thing that everyone's talking about. It's like their one big story. And I'm not going to get into the details of it. It's Sami Zayn versus Roman Reigns. They've had this great feud. Okay. And all I can think of is this, you know, my big beef as a wrestling fan over the decades has been, all I want from the product is something that I'm not embarrassed to have on television if somebody comes over, right? And a lot of times wrestling is really bad. But when wrestling is good, it's great. And it's not always good, right? But when it's like Saturday Night Live, it's not always good.
Right.
But when it is good, it's really good. Oh, and there's my alarm, which tells us we're getting here to the end of the main event of our discussion here. Randall, I want to thank you for sitting through this professional wrestling conversation. I promise I'll bring us back into a real sport, a more non-scripted sport. Although from what a lot of people on the internet tell me, the NBA is also scripted and all these other sports.
Yeah, that's true. I heard the Super Bowl is also fixed, so everything is scripted.
Everything is fixed. Yeah, that's right. So maybe, as wrestling has always been, it's just ahead of the times more than anything else.
There you go,
Randall. I appreciate you, and we will talk soon.